Well, I'll do the I do before I know I press start, but I've got some but I do have some topics rather than notes. I'm so not structured for this. Welcome to episode three of we've got a new name now. It's no longer Method AF. We've had some good thinking about it, and we've changed it to Method On The Record
Yeah,
podcast.
which I prefer.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a bit more fun. It's a bit more bubbly. It's a bit more sort of relatable to us, and we definitely prefer it. But in today's episode, we're going to be talking about consistency. A great
Yeah,
topic.
specifically, yeah, specifically how you can effectively be good at anything, including being bad.
Yeah, I mean, if that's literally all it is. I've got I mean, I think I'm going to bring a very different perspective to this conversation to what you will, because mine might be very sort of business biased and very much focused on sort of kind of like the approach towards it, rather than maybe it being quite training specific, because it's all the same at the end of the day, the
Yeah.
understanding the concept of it. I
But I
kind
guess I think, go on, I think like what I was going to ask you is probably where in your area, where in life are you generally most consistent? And it could be
Or
anything, right? It doesn't
habits.
even have to be, yeah, that's it, is habits are effectively consistency blown up, right? You know, you consistently brush your teeth, therefore it becomes a habit.
The interesting thing on consistency is that it's almost like it is a mindset, because going back to like the definition of consistency, a lot of people think consistency, and I thought about this morning, and I thought about it all the time, like that borderline of consistency and insanity, because insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again. And people think consistency is doing the same thing over and over and over again. It is, but it's not at the same time. It's like, for me, consistency, understanding that if you approach it with sort of like this tunnel of this sort of like process of evolution, where it's like you've got to be consistent going on the journey. And it's like it being consistent is taking on the failures, taking on the challenges, evolving yourself, respecting the journey. And yes, it is also doing the same things over and over again at times, but understanding that there is a difference between going insane and evolving.
I think as well you could argue that consistency is effectively showing up to do that thing regardless of the environment. So regardless of adversity, regardless of what obstacles have come in your way, and then finding a way, like you said, to kind of overcome those things and evolve. Because if you do keep showing up, you will eventually figure out a way to overcome those things, you know?
And I think people, I mean, to be honest, for me, I've always had the mindset of if you consistently do something, you will succeed. But at the same time, if you consistently do it wrong, and you do it with the wrong sort of mindset and the wrong intention and the wrong whatever, it can run you to the ground. And I think to be honest, I will say it is hard to know a healthy level of consistency and an unhealthy level of consistency.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think,
I would say beginning of my career was definitely an unhealthy level of consistency. It's like even just from a PT perspective, it was I booked in 6 a.m. clients Monday through Saturday, you know, or as soon as the gym opened. And that's not necessarily a healthy level for me, but I was being consistent with my business and therefore it grew. So I think you make sacrifices along the way.
I almost feel like you've got to go beyond that level of healthy consistency to see your boundaries. And it is hard, because obviously, I mean, it's like, I mean, you look at all these successful people in the world, like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, bloody, what's the Amazon guy's name again? I keep forgetting.
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. These people are probably the most consistent, but also the most inconsistent people in the world, because they're so consistent with the fact that they've been so driven to succeed. But I read this really interesting article, actually by Jeff Bezos, and he explains how if consistency is done in the way that you have a one-dimensional mindset, you will not evolve and succeed. So it's looking at, okay, these guys are consistent, but they know what type of consistency they need to get the job done.
Well, I think this is why they effectively become classified as disruptive.
Mm.
It's because you can consistently follow what the market wants, or you can go and show the market what it needs by being disruptive. And I think this is where I think when Apple first came out, basically all phone companies were at the mercy of telecom companies. They effectively built their phones to the standard that the telecom companies could provide. And then Apple went the other way and were just like, no, we're going to build a phone better than what you can provide, and you better keep up. And I think that's what made them just stand out. You know, it's just, they just became the market leader, and because no one else had ever really thought about that.
And I think
they got left behind, really, didn't they?
I almost think as well, like, and this is just thinking about it, I think the reason why they do so well is because they've identified their core values, as you could say, their core message, their core purpose. And that is what they've been consistent with. And I think that that is an understanding of belief. That's an understanding of why they do what they do. I mean, this article of Jeff Bezos, he explains his four core values behind the business. And the first bit of the article is consistency is unhealthy, but he is consistent with his core values. So he has four core values that he's driven the business around from day one. So I think an example like Apple, their core values, I mean, you can see it today in their product. They were, I mean, this is from my perspective, I might be completely wrong. I know the history of Apple, but obviously someone might probably tell me I've got it wrong. iPods and MacBooks, the big chunky Macs, were a big part of their business. And from my perspective, at the beginning, when I first saw Apple, it was very much a iPod-style music product. And it was a very creative product. And then obviously...
I had the 1990s, like, box Macintosh. And then I had the one that was, like, almost like a dome.
Yeah.
It was blue. So my family have had Macs their whole life. And then suddenly my dad's decided that he doesn't like Macs anymore. it's gone to, like, Lenovo or something.
Lenovo? Oh, no. Lenovo is... yeah, but
they're doing all right, actually.
No, they're good. But I definitely, like, seeing Apple go into the phone industry, I remember, because I was like, they ain't gonna work. They are not gonna work. But they were so consistent with their sort of identity that they just eventually just absolutely smashed the market.
Which is why it's scary that they're going and looking at, I think their patent isn't on hold anymore for electric vehicles. So you know that's a scary one.
I suppose a question for you is, when looking at consistency, what are sort of, like, I mean, in terms of training especially, how do you look at a healthy level of consistency and unhealthy?
So this is something that I have to remind myself of sometimes, especially when I'm nursing injuries. And since our last chat, obviously got hit by a car. So,
gotta stop doing wheelies.
I say to you, oh mate, I wish it was that magical, but it's 15 miles an hour.
Well, that's true, so, you can't do wheelies.
So what I try to say to clients and try to follow myself, is effectively you've got to look at fitness as you're shoveling a pile of dirt, and some days you'll be able to turn up with a JTB. Some days you'll turn up with a shovel, sometimes you'll turn up with a teaspoon. But if you turn up every day, you will still move a little bit of that dirt.
Mm.
And so you're moving towards your objective no matter what. My training this morning, I can't really use my left leg. So it involved a lot of core work. I did some static holds. I did some kettlebell farmer's carries, but obviously standing still. And I did a lot of hollow body and gymnastic work. So it wasn't really going towards what I wanted, because in the moment I've been trying to build my engine on the Concept 2 bike.
Mm.
But, you know, it's turning up and doing more than nothing. So today I turned up with a teaspoon. Tomorrow and probably for the next 3 weeks will also be like teaspoons.
Mm.
But eventually it will get me back to moving. And it's, you know, the amount of dirt you can move in 3 weeks with a teaspoon is significant compared to not doing anything at all.
Yeah. So what would you say, okay, to Joe down the road, who back in the day, obviously not in the moment, you would see in the gym, Globo Gym, every single day doing the same thing over and over and over again? Would you say he is the most consistent athlete out there?
What I would say is he is being consistent, but potentially just having not been given the education or the tools to show up, maybe he's just limited to a teaspoon.
Mm.
So maybe all he can turn up with is a teaspoon and he just doesn't know yet. He just hasn't been shown the shovel. He hasn't been shown the JCB. So this is kind of similar to like how I speak to my parents about stuff, is they're not really interested in the JCB or shovel.
Mm.
So their program is very, very similar week on week. And they're happy with that because all they want to do at the moment is shovel dirt with a teaspoon.
Yeah.
However, when they're ready to take that step, I can show them the shovel.
Mm.
So that's all that I guess Joe in the Globo Gym is doing at the moment is, you know, if he's been doing the same thing day in, day out for 5 years, he has his, I squat this, I pull this,
mm.
I push this on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. He will be making progress of some sort, and he's probably making himself quite resilient. But for what? Like, step up to the next level. Otherwise, your resiliency is almost like you're not going to progress much further. You're just going to keep doing the same thing. So and like I said, he will have moved significant amount of dirt in 5 years of showing up with a teaspoon.
Yeah. I mean,
much more than someone who hasn't done it at all.
Theoretically, you'd say he's quite one-dimensional. I mean, not in the way of this is the way it works, but in the way he's very sort of tunnel vision, one-dimensional, where he doesn't know anything else. He doesn't know anything better. So for him,
yeah,
like you said, the small spoon is the only way. And I think...
But I'll tell you, just to touch on that, it's easier to coach someone who's been showing up for 5 years
mm-hmm.
with a teaspoon rather than someone who shows up on a weekly basis with a teaspoon, a JCB, a shovel,
mm.
or nothing at all. Because that's just showing complete inconsistency.
Mm.
You know, ideally, your recovery wants to be so great that you're showing up with a JCB or a shovel each day. You know, you don't necessarily want to have to dial it back to a teaspoon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's easy to build on that foundation if they've been doing a little bit each day.
Yeah. Now, when looking, I mean, I know I'm throwing loads of things out there, but I kind of like, when I think of consistency, I think of like this journey, because it's not just a matter of doing the same thing. It's not just a matter of doing what's in front of you. It's a matter of being able to deal with the consequences of what you're doing. So every action has a reaction, every opposite. Well, everyone says it differently, but everything you do is going to be some sort of change. It's going to trigger some sort of reaction, is going to trigger some sort of failure, it's going to bring up other problems that might mean that it reduces that level of consistency and change of direction or whatever. Now, obviously, on a sort of over the top scale, consistency is I'm going to go to the gym every day. From a micro scale, it's I'm going to do this program for 5 weeks, then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that, and being consistent when you're driven to doing that and dealing with the fight to try and achieve it. So looking at it from sort of like a micro scale, you've got elements of fear, you've got elements of change, you've got elements of uncertain uncertain, what's the word like? Uncertainty. How would you advise a client that is potentially, and obviously we're being very training heavy at the moment, and we'll, I quite like to go into sort of businesses because I find that really useful because it transfers over with sort of the mindset and approach. How would you deal with a client that is struggling? Because as you know, like strength cycles, for me, strength cycles and aerobic cycles and potentially, I mean, any sort of cycle requires consistency on a micro and a macro level. How would you support a client and how would you tackle the challenges that they encounter? And especially if they are someone that struggles doing 3 to 4 weeks or potentially the same things, but are progressive slightly.
So what I would generally say is that if someone the whole process of going on to the next cycle in a program, just doing that in itself kind of it almost excites someone into thinking, right, I'm going on something new, I should be consistent on this. So that in itself often promotes a little bit more consistency, at least for a few weeks, right? But what I try to generally say to people is like, inconsistency generally, it kind of breeds this erratic behavior. And what ends up happening is, and you'll see it with lockdown all the time, and when we came out of lockdown last time, when we've gone back in, people haven't touched a barbell in months. And so they've inconsistently trained with a barbell. And then they get back onto their barbell on day one and they're like, let's max out. You know, they're not going into the gym and going, do you know what I'll do today is I'll do a single arm dumbbell workout. I'm not going to continue the consistency I've been going on for the past 3 months. I'm going to try and just jump ship and go off something else. And that's the problem with inconsistency is you don't get drastically better at anything. And this is the thing with strength cycles, so aerobic cycles, all you're doing in general for most of those things is doing the thing that you need to work on more consistently, and that's what breeds the results. It's not necessarily the percentages, it's not necessarily the reps or the volume, it's the fact that you're doing that thing more often. If I take someone from squatting once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks, and now we go to three times a week, as long as their joints can handle it and they're resilient enough, they will get better at squatting. And it's down to the coach and the individual to find out what kind of volume, what kind of rep scheme works best for those people. So for example, a small off cycle is 4 times a week squatting. I get stronger in the squatting because I've done more squatting. I also utterly destroy my knees because my knees are just not strong enough. So whilst that is a cycle that a lot of people look up and they go on, it's not necessarily the best. Yes, they get results. And especially if you've done it for the first time, you're like, I gained 20 kilos on my squat. I'm like, great. Guess what happens when you do it next time? It might be 8 kilos on your squat. And then you'll go through it again and you get maybe 2 kilos on your squat, except now you've got absolutely destroyed knees. So when you see someone and they're squatting 3 times a week, so you've got hatch squat cycle, small arms, that kind of stuff, they're generally, you're squatting more often. And if you break it down, you're looking at, you know, I think I'll probably get this a little bit wrong, but small arms, I believe, is 7 sets of 5, 6 sets of 4, 8 sets of 3, or 10 sets of 2.
That's small arms junior, mate.
That's small arms junior.
What are you doing junior but for?
That's only four. That's 4 to 6 weeks. There's no way I'd get through the full set. You know, but that's a lot of volume, especially on those 10 sets of 2 or 10 sets of 3.
10-3, yeah.
Oh, no, it's not. It's 10-3, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, they're heavy.
So it's...
They're heavy.
It's 5, 7,
by the time
7,
you get
5.
To the end of that squat cycle.
Yeah.
And it very much shows, because I've been through that cycle, and I've seen clients go through that cycle before, especially in my earlier days. The days where I've got 7 sets of 6 are tragic. I hate 10 sets of 3, no problem. So what does that say? Like, a lot of people struggle with the 10 sets of three.
Well, you probably struggle a lot of with people... 7 by 6 because it's meant to be 7 by 5. So you've been doing one too many all seven the time.
Five. It's been a long time since I've done this cycle.
At least you've been consistently doing it wrong.
But what it effectively shows is that, I mean, if you want to go really deep into it, it's effectively to do with how my body responds to blood flow going in and out of the muscle. And if I've got no blood flow going in and out of the muscle because I am contracting so hard that blood can't get in, blood can't get out, and I am good at that stuff, then I'm going to favor that 10 sets of three. I'm going to enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? But the huge pump that I tend to get from doing anything more than five reps is tragic in the Smolov cycle, because I'm like, three sets in, I'm like, everything's blown up.
Yeah.
The first rep feels like a lactic acid rep. So, yeah, I mean, like, that. Effectively, the strength cycles and things like that are all down to consistency. And same with aerobic cycles. No one is rowing four times a week and then thinks, do you know what? I need to go on an aerobic rowing cycle. Because they're already effectively doing it. Maybe they need a bit more structure, but it's very unlikely that that person's got a poor engine or is not progressing by doing it four times a week.
I think this is why, going back to what I said at the beginning, this is why it's so important to approach consistency as a process of evolution rather than a process of insanity. So doing the same thing over and over again. So I, on the Smolov topic, and it actually relates quite well to consistency and looking at this as a process of evolution, I actually did the whole cycle, got to the very last 10 by 3 before Christmas. I was like, this is going to be the best Christmas ever. I've been hitting like ridiculous numbers. I got into the fourth set and something went in my back, my right side of my thoracic. And I was like, nah, I wanted to PB. I wanted to max out the week after, whenever it was. And I was like, right, okay, I'm going to strip it down. Everyone's doing the Christmas workout next to me. It was like 100 double unders into 90 whatever crazy thing, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna stop because I feel a niggle. I'm gonna do the Christmas workout because community. And I did the first set of double unders and I got to 40 and I had this like shock up my back and I couldn't move. And I was going out with someone at the time who did acupuncture, and literally went straight back. She put a needle in it, released it, but it was done. And I think what I could have done is been absolutely destroyed and absolutely killed myself. But looking at it as with a consistent mindset, I was like, right, I need to keep evolving. I need to adapt. So what I did was my adaptation was towards recovery. And for me, training was very much focused on developing me as a coach at the time. So this was early days of me being a coach. I was still learning, which is also why I did Smolov. And that's when I started doing gymnastics. I went to Ido Portal's course in Barcelona. I did Power Monkey, the online gymnastics course. I basically just completely focused on gymnastics, didn't touch a barbell. But I was so consistent. I would almost say my consistency continued from when I started that Smolov cycle, because as you know, you need to be so consistent when you start that training program. Like, it is however many weeks from the first week where you do like the conditioning week and you're like, this is light, it's going to be easy, all the way through. I think it's having that mindset of knowing, okay, my consistency doesn't ever end. It is always evolving. As long as I am consistent in my approach of adapting, understanding what I need to do to progress to the next step. And it's difficult because it's knowing, and it kind of goes back to when we're talking about like shutting the door and consistency. It's difficult because ego plays a big role in consistency as well, because when you're on this path of evolving and this path of developing and being consistent, it's hard to know when to shut a door and go on to the next thing. So, and obviously failure is a big hurdle and everything else. And it's, you can, from my perspective, you can never really tell someone when to close the door on something. closing the door does not mean that you're not being consistent. But I almost feel like when you close a door, you need to move on to the next one, because that is consistency from my perspective. Because if you go back and you dwell, or you go back to it and you're umming and ahhing, and or at the same time, if you close the door too early and you didn't make the most of it, then you're not being consistent. So it's like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like that fine balance.
Yeah. I think as well, there's like almost like a social media pressure when it comes to consistency, because sometimes you see people and they're like a dog with a bone. And I kind of say this to people with mobility. It's like, why is it that you're doing 40 minutes of mobility work every time you come into the gym for the past 3 years? Like, surely you are mobile by now, or whatever it is you're doing is clearly not working for you. But someone has drilled into them that they needed to foam roll and they needed to stretch before a session. And that's not always the case. They could probably find that they could spend 6 to 10 weeks prioritizing their mobility in a strength way and find that actually, well, now I can get into the gym and warm up in 5-10 minutes. I see people faff all the time with foam rollers, and you're like, okay, think about what foam roller is doing. It's effectively a massage. Now, I don't know about you, but when I come out of a massage, I feel loose and I feel relaxed. I do not feel ready to lift heavy weights or do intervals. I feel ready to go home.
Yeah.
All right. So what I generally say to people is like, your warm-up should be, you know, it's what you kind of spoke about with the nervous system post yesterday. As you get in, like, you spike yourself. Like, you bring yourself to an elevated level, ready to train. Like, when you train, effectively, you should be going in there ready to fight a lion. And then when you leave, you're ready to recover. So maybe you spend some time foam rolling, stretching at the end of your session to get yourself into like a more parasympathetic state. But you don't want that parasympathetic state right before you lift. It would be like doing yin yoga right before weightlifting.
Yeah.
Sure, you'd be able to hit your positions, but I'm pretty sure that you're not going to feel pumped up. So
it's also as
yin yoga is often before, like, people do it as a way to kind of gently start their day or a way to finish their day.
It's also as a coach, like, if you had a client that needed to stretch 40 minutes a day, then maybe you need to change the programming bias. Because if they are incapable of moving correctly in that session and prime their body, that's not healthy. And you want to create, I mean, I don't know about you, but if I was chased by a zombie all of a sudden, or if I had to jump up and attack someone just to save a puppy or something like that, I didn't want to have to be in a position I'd pull a muscle or I'd injure myself, or I would have to be like,
because you haven't done your foam rolling.
Yeah, like, I want to develop a machine that I can just jump into action. I mean, obviously there is some stretching that's needed and priming and everything else, but I think, I mean, obviously we're going to go back on the topic of consistency, and this is kind of consistency, is, like you said, having that consistency of doing 40 minutes a day is not healthy, of the same thing over and over again, where you're not looking at how you're evolving. I mean, if anything, if you're doing 40 minutes of stretching a day, after 4 weeks, you should hopefully take it down to 2 days a week, or three, or at least 10 minutes, whatever.
Or you just don't do it before your training session.
Yeah.
Maybe you do it in the evening before you go to sleep.
Yeah. And what I just thought about, so what are your thoughts on the statement of, I mean, obviously there's lots of ways to look at the statement. What was it? It's like, doing things consistently wrong, but at least they're consistent. What's the term for that? Do you know what I mean?
Uneducated.
But like, when someone goes, I think, to be honest, I probably got it from some YouTuber, Max Tuning, who was like, I measure my food wrong, but at least I do it consistently wrong every single time.
Okay, so it's kind of like, if you step on the scales and your scales are wrong, as long as you're stepping on the same scales,
then the incrementals are the same.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Okay.
So if you're consistently measuring yourself on 14 different scales, you'll never have any idea of your progress.
So as long as it's numbers driven.
I mean, I guess it to an extent, but then you could argue, like, I see a lot of people who, and actually I went through this myself, is you can get very good at performing lifts badly.
Mm.
So I got all the way to 100 kilo snatch. I didn't move my feet. I really pulled it off the floor quite hard. And then I spent 6 months being stuck at 100 kilos.
Mm.
But to the average person, that snatch is relatively strong. But I completely stopped progressing. So from when I started to snatch all the way up to 100 kilos, I was getting better at doing something badly.
Mm.
Right? And actually, if you look at the very, very early days of CrossFit and you look at the way Jason Kalipa moved,
oof,
you were like, man, that guy is so, yeah, so good at doing things badly.
Yeah.
And then he took a step back and now he moves extremely, extremely well.
Yeah.
But, and a lot of the time, this kind of consistent poor movement execution is going to lead to an injury further down the line, mm, which will then force you to not be consistent anymore.
Yeah.
Or rewrite your patterns entirely. So on the topic of doing something badly but consistently, you can get good at anything you put your mind to, including doing things badly.
Well, on failure, I personally think that failure makes you better at being consistent in the right way. So failure is almost like the source of getting better, mm, at improving your ability to be consistent in a healthier way.
Yeah, so in kind of my experience, that would have been missing 102 kilo snatch over and over and over again,
yeah,
forced me to rethink.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can, the sad thing is technique is, it's not subjective,
mm,
but there are Olympians in weightlifting who have been doing it for so long from such a young age. Well, I would not promote. CJ Cummings is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
He is insanely strong, insanely resilient, and just pretty much battered anyone close to his weight category when he was a youth.
Mm-hmm.
But his technique is very specific to how he learned how to lift.
Yeah.
There's not many people I would promote his weightlifting technique to.
Well, look at Klokhoff.
Yeah, same things, like
the worst
pulling
lifter
with your feet base. Pulling your feet, pulling snatch with your heels,
yeah,
pretty much stuck together, works for him. Not RDL many people snatch are as resilient. Yeah, not many people are as resilient as him.
The thing,
he arguably had a stronger pause snatch than he did a snatch.
But the thing that gets me right is, I mean, this in weightlifting is a funny place because there's so many different methodologies. I mean, obviously the Chinese weightlifters, and I am massively inspired by Chinese weightlifters and Russian because they are so bloody consistent with how they evolve their athletes with their training methodology. Like, you look at Chinese lifters, they are
there's
so,
a culture thing there.
Well, yeah, they are so strong at developing. Well, they're so good at developing like power from being so grounded on the floor. And they've got backs that are just absolutely stacked. You watch like, and it's funny because you watch the Olympics and you watch sort of, or any weightlifting competition, and you see every like region come up. And the lifters kind of lift the same because of the way they've been educated. And it's funny because,
yeah, the Colombians lift fast.
Yeah.
It's power.
Yeah. Chinese are grounded. Yes, their heels come off the floor, but they don't focus on going on their toes as much. But anyway, what's the famous Chinese squat jerker?
Lu Xiaojun.
Lu Xiaojun. What did you say?
Lu Xiaojun.
Yeah, that one.
I probably say it wrong as well. I'm a fake Asian.
As soon as he came, we're not going to cover that. As soon as he came into the weightlifting industry, he looked so beautiful. He looked so elegant. And suddenly, I remember everyone wanted to train like him. And it's like Turok as well. He trained so well and he was very much about this hip banging up and not so much elbows in front, but hip banging up. And suddenly everyone was doing his drills. And I think it's obviously for me, I obviously did a cycle. I failed. And that's when I learned, okay, I need to be consistent, but I can't be one dimensional. And I think a lot of, and like you said, with Instagram and influence, I think a lot of people are influenced with their consistency in certain areas. Like they get influenced by Olympic lifters and how much they can lift and think, I'm going to base my consistency and my effort on this person.
Yeah, I mean, the Chinese is very push. Everything is a push. Like their squat is so... You never see a single Chinese lifter struggle with their standing up a clean.
No.
You know?
No.
Their quads are so strong. And the way they teach it is you drive into the floor, you push into the floor. It's not really even called a first, second, or third pull. No. Everything is a push, 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 push. And so what that does is creates this bolt upright torso, which means they've got an incredibly strong back and incredibly strong quads.
Mm.
And half the time you look at them and they're like, that was slow off the floor. And then they just teleported up
power
in their clean. Yeah. So, it's their technique from a really young age. And a lot of them are taught in schools as well. It's done in a militant way.
Mm.
And that's, like I said, that's a culture thing. It's like, I think, the UK, the US, too afraid of upsetting people. I'm going to get into a really long tangent here, but maybe we shouldn't go into this one.
we'll change topic. Go into this one.
But no, it's done in a militant way, and that militant way is kind of like, it breeds the consistency.
Mm.
Even if you watch Klokov's dad claims all responsibility for Klokov's success, and he's like
Britney Spears' dad. Young
age, yeah. And Klokov's dad was like from age of six, I make Dmitry jump into cold lake every day. I'm like, I mean, in most countries, that is child abuse.
Yeah,
right. But he did it every day, jumped into a frozen lake from like the age of six. So
yeah, but
it breeds like this consistent mentality.
Don't the Chinese
it is effectively child abuse.
Apparently Chinese put rice bags on their kids' feet and hands at a very young age to build strength.
I've not heard.
Have you not? Where did I hear? I heard that from someone. Either they're taking the piss.
I think you've watched Mulan. I think it's like. You've watched Mulan where they carry like buckets of water, and buckets of rice.
I will not go into that.
I've told you to stop educating yourself at Disney.
I told Laura we're strapping rice bags to our kids when we're older. So I want to bring this over because obviously a big part for me on building strength and consistency is failure. And I mean, for me. And obviously, we've had many failures in our times that have built us to who we are. And that is what has kind of built us this sort of, not sixth sense, but this knowing of, okay, I need to keep going, or I need to be consistent, or I need to keep driving, and I need to obviously change direction. Okay, maybe that is not consistent on a smaller scale, but on a bigger scale, I've taken in consideration everything involved in my life. This is what I need, sort of thing. I kind of like talking about the topic of failure because that is what, for me, I find is most inspirational. And to be honest, I find when trying to support clients on being consistent, failure is kind of like the number one problem. Like the fear of failure, so like the fear of flight style, or actually failing and not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and seeing that failure is part of the process. And the process of evolution to build them. And I almost find like failure is there as a test to see if you have earned the right to get to the next level, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I've actually got, did you know, I've got two failure stories here. Steve Jobs. Did you know that he was fired from his own business?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
So he obviously had a big failure. That worked out well for him. And then he obviously set up NEX. What is NEXT?
Clothing brand?
No, it's not. It's bloody clothing. Can you imagine Steve Jobs set up NEXT?
No, but NEXT is clothing brand.
But so Steve Jobs was fired from Apple. Yeah. Obviously, I mean, if you've seen the film. What's that?
No, I think, yeah, you're right. Like, he was fired from his, and then they realized that actually the company needed him.
Yeah. Well, he set up Pixar. Okay. And next.
I didn't know that.
So, I'm going to read this. The dismissal made him realize that his passion for his work exceeded the disappointment of failure. Further ventures such as NEXT, not the clothing brand, and Pixar eventually led to Jobs back to the CEO position of Apple. So he was so consistent as almost like with an evolutionary mindset that he was set on his goals and his core values and what he wanted to achieve and his passion. And he set up, I mean, the fact that he set up Pixar is pretty epic. And then Apple took him back. Do you know Bill Gates?
Do I know Bill Gates? No, not personally, his, but I know of him.
So Bill Gates was a Harvard dropout. He co-owned a business called Traf-O-Data, which was a true failure. So all these people have had serious failures, but have been so consistent in their mindset, in their drive, and their passion to turn those failures into pretty epic fucking businesses. And I remember seeing a video on Jeff Bezos. I think it was on Instagram. I saw it, and it was a chat with him, and this woman was giving him an interview probably like, God, that's been however many years ago. And she was like, well, how are you certain that people are going to start buying things online? They like, is that really going to be the direction? Is this really going to be a success? And he's like, look, if in 10 years time I have not made a success out of this business, then I would have had so much failure to adapt and change the business in the way that it will succeed. And I think that is kind of the approach that we need to take. Mm. Consistency.
Yeah. Yeah. To an extent.
To an extent.
Because I think from a business perspective, yes. Like, you fail fast and you learn from it.
Mm.
Like, don't be a dog with a bone with something that's literally dragging you down.
Yeah.
It's like, accept your losses, move on. And learn from it. But fitness, to an extent, I try not to push people to failure too often. Mm. Because it's a different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, now you're talking about the human body and the nervous system and people's health.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it works within a business. All there's, I guess, you know, if you get to a point in a program, if you're on a template or you're on a cycle that is just asking you to fill your percentages in, then if you get to a point where you're like, I can't physically do this anymore, or I'm going to hit failure on week 4 of 6,
mm.
don't jump to week 5 and then do it all over again.
Mm.
Either go back and earn the right to move on, or accept that this program might actually not be for you.
Mm.
You know?
I think, obviously physical failure is something you should never try and push and achieve as a coach. And I mean, you should be experienced enough to know your safety factor. So safety factor being what their capacity is, how much you're throwing at them. And almost if you are close to that breaking point, then.
Or they need to learn how to fail.
Yeah.
In a safe manner.
I mean.
So like, if someone's testing their 1RM, let's say on a back squat, and they don't know how to bail out of a back squat,
mm.
it's very likely they're never going to reach their 1RM.
Yeah.
Because there's that psychological fear.
Yeah.
So you teach someone how to fail within fitness and teach them how to move on from it.
Mm.
Because I know a lot of people get dejected, like they miss a lift and they get dejected. A really good example is actually Froning. It's when you see him miss a lift, he's like, God, calm down.
Yeah.
I've got this.
Yeah.
You know, you just like step aside. I'm going to go for this again because I know I can do this again.
Mm.
And my failure was a technical miss. And I don't think, you know, you so rarely see like elite athletes fail something and not really recover from it.
Mm. I see that.
Because it's a mindset.
That, yeah, it's a mindset. And I think that is the level of consistency that has been evolved. And that is a level of consistency that's been built from many failures, many learnings, many changes. And I think it's almost, I mean, like we said, obviously failure is a massive builder to a healthy balance of consistency, passion, gut instinct, maybe not even gut instinct. But I think as long as, I know you said cutting it short, if you almost like cutting your losses essentially in sort of business, but I definitely feel like getting a better understanding in yourself helps with having better, healthier consistency. Because obviously you could almost say, like I said before, when do I stop? And I think if you have a better understanding in yourself, then you'll have a better understanding as to when is the right time to stop.
Yeah, I think for me, failure within fitness is, I know the point at which my body starts to give up.
Yeah.
And I know the point at which I'm dicing with that line between success and injury. And I don't really need to go there based on what my fitness goals are anymore. And sometimes you'll see someone do something, and in my head, I'm like, the only way this person is going to learn now is if they get injured.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing I can physically say. They're so dog with a bone on what they're doing. The only way they're going to learn is when they get injured.
Yeah.
And it's humbling. And you know, in my CrossFit experience, at the very beginning, there were older PTs who were like, you're training too much. And I was like, pipe down, old timer. Mm. And then I fractured my back. And I was like, I didn't even learn from that, to be honest. Mm. I recovered from that, and then I ended up with a bit of bursitis in my shoulder. And it was only when I really did my shoulder in where I was like, you know what, upper body strength has always been my thing. Like, I'm clearly pushing this too hard now. And it took a couple of injuries for me to just step back and go, what am I training for here?
Yeah.
And ultimately ended up with, no, I want to be able to show up every day for fitness and health. And at the moment, and the track I'm going on, 80-year-old Mike doesn't care what you snatched when you were 30 years old.
Yeah.
Like, but you're going to really care if you can't get out of your chair at 80 years old.
Yeah.
And that was the kind of path that I was going on that I've kind of come off. And I do see it a lot with PTs, a lot with coaches, when they're like, they can't let go of the need to be perceived as the hardest working person in the room, despite what their body is telling them.
Mm. What's their capacity?
Yeah, sometimes what you see within sports is what you probably unkindly could call a dumb athlete.
Mm.
Someone who has incredible power, they're incredibly talented, incredible strength, but they have very little awareness of their own body, and therefore they just keep pushing. And you will never beat them in terms of working hard. However, the niggle that they're feeling in their left knee on the right-hand side of their lower back is something they perceive to just be normal.
Mm.
And they perceive almost like everyone else in the room has this, like, I'm not going to be perceived as weak. And they just keep going and keep going until, bam, they're having a surgery.
Yeah.
You know?
It's also hard to see what's behind the scenes, like you said, with the niggle, but also on someone else, how many years have they evolved to get to that? Like, everyone's got a different process, and you definitely find in fitness, people always try to find shortcuts, even though, yes, they are being consistent, but they just find shortcuts, and they compare themselves to other people and not see what's going on with them. Like, there are so many top level athletes that have ridiculous injuries, and they are pushing themselves to, and I quite like this topic because, I mean, it's not a topic, it's more something that I learned from my engineering was, we worked out a lot of, when designing a component, is all about safety factor. So for example, when you're designing the front landing gear for an aircraft, you're not going to have a low safety factor. So it's the amount of load that it can take before it breaks, the amount of load that it will take. And it's like that balance of, okay, landing gear, you want about 150% safety factor, because that's pretty, you don't want it to break. But at the same time, you're going to hinder your performance because it's going to be heavier, it's going to require more material, it's going to be less aerodynamic, but it's needed. Whereas a Formula One car, a great example, some back in the day, they used to do safety factors of about 4%. Now, 4%, if you've ever watched that video of the Toro Rosso, I can't remember what track it was. I think it might have been Catalunya, where they go to that first corner, slam the brakes, and both front wheels just go boof. Seen that video?
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So that is a car that is pushed to its most extreme safety factor, where probably Jeremy in the calculations rooms probably done a point or rounded a point off wrong, and that 1% is done to 0.5%, and then suddenly the tyres temperature's not right and they put too much load in and both front swing arms just snapped. It's the same with athletes and people. It's understanding capacity. It's knowing what safety factor they want to apply to their training and what's healthy for them, what they want to achieve.
Yeah, yeah. I remember something within Formula One, I can't remember who it was that said it, and it was like the perfect engine would be the one that that blew up as it crossed the
line. Yeah, the second after it blows up, after you cross the line,
But human bodies are not like that.
No.
And this is the thing, is this is where people get a little bit confused between athleticism and elite performance and health and fitness. Is you want health and fitness, you need to be consistently showing up until the day you die.
Yeah.
Whereas elite level performance, you might only have to consistently show up until you're 30 and then just deal with the repercussions for the rest of your life. Pretty much every retired NFL player is broken. You know, pretty much every elite gymnast has had some kind of injury or surgery. And it's like, you can chase these things, but they come at a consequence.
Yeah.
So whilst their consistency is showing up day in, day out, regardless, there is also an element of you need to understand the consequences of you showing up like this.
Yeah. With such a low safety factor that they are getting so much performance out of themselves, but they're hindering on their health and their any moment is a risk. I mean, you look at top level. Yeah,
these guys also have like everything in place to make sure they don't break.
Yeah.
You know, they have daily massage, they have daily physio. You know, these are the things that keep them running. It's effectively like having an MOT every single day to make sure your body's in check. Whereas your average person who is training for elite performance but not recovering, that's not consistent. And their lifespan's going to be a lot shorter within whatever sport they're training for.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's... I enjoyed that chat. That was good.
I think we stayed relatively on topic on that one.
I know. I mean... I think we said the word consistency about 200 times.
Yeah, at least it dialed in.
No, it was really good. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Mike, you haven't got anything more to add, have you?
No, nothing more to add on that.
Cool.
If you don't get it by now, then just hit rewind and listen to it all again.
Guys, make sure if you want to leave any comments, if you've got any questions, give us an ask. Like whatever you're listening this, well, wherever, Spotify, Shopify, wherever, Google, Twitch, I don't know, every single platform, we'll try and get it on there. Like, subscribe, let us know what you think, and stay tuned for the next episode.